rewind to like just a year ago, people just thought, okay, Solana's dead, like totally dead chain. Everybody left. The developers are leaving, 75 developers, whatnot. And then now, perhaps the biggest payments company on Earth, along with Visa at least, is live demoing a new crypto integration for the entire industry using Solana.
This episode is brought to you by Helium Mobile. They've created a crypto-native phone plan for unlimited talk, text, and data for just $20 a month. We'll chat more about them later in the show.
Before we get moving on today's episode, just a quick disclaimer. The views expressed on this podcast by either myself, my co-host, or any guests are their personal views and do not represent the views of any associated organization. Nothing in the episode should be construed or relied upon as financial, technical, tax, legal, or any other advice. Okay, let's jump into the episode. All right, everyone, welcome back to another episode of Lightspeed. Mert and I are here for another roundup. We are recording this on the 1st of May, so happy spring. I think May 1st is the first day of spring, but we're going to pretend like it is. Busy weeks in Solana land over the past couple of days. And so it's been a while. It feels like we've been a while since we've done a roundup. So a lot of ground to cover. But one of the most exciting things for me was this Stripe news. So in a world of like SEC lawsuits, tiresome infrastructure launches, meme coin gambling, and all of this, we like finally got a huge canary, if you will, of somebody actually bringing real world adoption into blockchain rails. And so Stripe announced that they're kind of bringing crypto payments directly into their platform. So anyone who uses Stripe for payments can actually receive payments in crypto. And there's a full 40-minute talk on exactly what the details of this are, and more broadly on their kind of vision of transactions instantly settling on chain. But there's a two or three minute segment specifically where they did a live demo. And so anybody who's done any sort of presentation knows the risks of a live demo. And they did the demo on Solana, no less. And this was like, I think it occurred on like the 24th or 25th of April. So they did a live demo on Solana like days after a bunch of patches went live to try to clear up some network congestion. And it worked. It worked flawlessly. It was beautiful. Very exciting to see from such a powerful company like Stripe. Now, so Mert, want to get your take on, I know you watched the clip and it was pretty cool to see, but I want to get your take on the whole thing.
Yeah, I think you said it well. It was the founder of Stripe, or their brothers, I think one is the CEO and one is, I don't know what he does, I think COO or something. I was surprised that it was the founder doing the demo. And no less, he was doing a live demo, like you said, on Solana days after congestion, or really during congestion. I would still say we're not really out of the woods yet. And in front of a lot of people to announce a pretty big integration, because I believe Stripe had support for crypto like a few years ago, and it just was like a bit clunky for them, I believe. Like, I think they had like Bitcoin payments, and then now they just brought it back with, you know, like you said, crypto's back. And I think he said something like, don't blink or you'll miss it or something. So, that was good to see. And I think it's like pretty underrated that they use Solana to do that, right? Like, just like if you zoom out and rewind to like just a year ago, or maybe slightly before then, people just thought, okay, Solana's dead, like totally dead chain. Everybody left. The developers are leaving, 75 developers, whatnot. And then now, perhaps the biggest payments company on Earth, along with Visa at least, is live demoing a new crypto integration for the entire industry using Solana. And then to be clear, it's not just Solana that they support. They also support Ethereum and Polygon, but they did the demo using Solana, presumably because it confirms the fastest, would be my guess. But like Phantom had support for all three. I'm pretty fired up about it. And like it's there's kind of a theme here, right? Like there's for Visa, first expanded to Solana with their pilot. MasterCard actually did the same, which kind of went under the radar a little bit. Stripe is now doing the same. Shopify had already done that as well, Shopify Pay. And then one of the things that really impressed me about Solana is like, and I don't want to like maybe shill Helios here, but like if you go to like Helios's website, and look at the use case on their payments. We work with these teams and they're like all ex Venmo or like ex PayPal. Oh, by the way, PayPal is also supporting Solana now soon with their stable coin that's already on Ethereum. The amount of payments talent on the chain is pretty insane to me. Like I worked in digital payments before this. It's actually why I got into crypto. I've never seen such a concentration of people who understand payments inside and out, both from like a consumer level, but also an enterprise level. And so payments generally take longer to really start flourishing just because there's a lot of hurdles in terms of legal and regulatory adoption. But like this just shows that the tech there is super, like very, very ready for payments. And it's like, I think like a global state machine just makes much more sense for global payments, because like the existing payment systems in the world are basically these kind of sets of islands that you have, and there's kind of different systems within them. And that's kind of how you end up with like fractured systems. You can never truly abstract that away. There's always something you can't abstract away. Like it's always a cat and mouse game. It kind of just confirms my personal thesis that integrated L1s, especially ones like Solana, which have shown kind of results in production, are kind of the right solution for payments. So, but then it's also running on Polygon. I believe it's the POS chain, though. I could be wrong on that. So we'll see kind of how it progresses with kind of these different architectures.
Yeah, it's interesting you brought up the architecture side of this as well, because they kind of made a decision in my mind of there was two routes. There's a fork in the road at some point in the rollout of this, where do you roll out support for the major chains? I think they recently post-announcement, they also integrated Avalanche, I believe. So they have like a good group of chains where activity is happening. Do you roll out support in that way? Versus the alternative, which is like launch. A former colleague of mine actually tweeted this, and he's like, "Why didn't this is cool and all, but like you're not using the latest and greatest infra and tools. Like, why not roll out an app specific L2? You know, like a OP Stack chain that's using like Celestia for DA, so it'd be super cheap, and kind of go that route. So you don't have the noisy namer problem. You're guaranteed low fees and whatnot, because you kind of be the only activity happening on this chain." And I actually thought that was an interesting perspective, because to me, they took a view, they took a stance and didn't go that route. I don't know how intentional that was. But to me, when I was thinking about this, you know, they're a payments business, a multi-billion dollar payments business. They're not a blockchain company. They don't want to think about running a chain. They don't want to think about the infrastructure setup that is required to do that, as opposed to what they did, which is just roll out smart contracts on a limited number of chains and like process payments that way. And I think it often gets lost on like the challenges of actually launching a chain, right? You need to set up like reliable RPC support. You need native USDC, native USDT, or any other tokens you want to like actually process payments in. You need a block explorer so people can actually see what's happening on your chain. You probably want to get your data integrated to, you know, I feel like I'm going on the same rant I've gone on many times on this show, right? You need to get your data out there. So unlike Dune or Flipside or Allium, so people can actually interact with it. And like, none of those things are trivial. Those are like all things that require a lift. And I brought that up, and his response was, yeah, but there's like RAS providers, right? You can, people spin up a chain for you these days. And I'm like, a multi-billion dollar business is not going to use a 6 month old startup. And I love the Conduit team. I think they're great people and they're building a really great product. It'd be exciting to see where it goes in the future. But I think that's ludicrous to think a multi-billion dollar company would use a RAS provider, or the alternative is like do it yourself, which is time and a significant amount of money. I'm just curious how you think about the actual rollout being on existing integrated chains as opposed to their own roll-up or L2 or even L1 that's just for their payments.
Yeah, I have I think that's a super silly take to do global payments on an isolated environment, right? Like, I think one of the – okay, like if you look at Swift today or just how digital payments work – one of the biggest problems with payments in existing systems is that it always needs to take hops to get to its destination. And every time you take a hop, especially in Web 2, there's take rates and there's latency and there's potentially a difference in like regulatory approaches for those different jurisdictions. And then in the context of crypto, especially, every hop now also has the additional complexity of different trust requirements and assumptions and bridge complexity. And like, you know, you might say, okay, well, there's going to be like Near or like Polygon in some period of time where they kind of unify this. It's like, okay. And then maybe then Stripe can come back and do that. But that's years away. It has not been tested. It has not shown anything in production currently. And so then as an engineer, you look at this and you say, okay, well, obviously the best solution is a global kind of state machine. Because what do you want? You want first composability with existing rails. Right, like you can instantly plug into like USDC, for example, or like PayPal USD or whatever stablecoin. You want infrastructure that's already set up for you, right? Like you said, there's all sorts of data providers already, RPC providers, different teams that build services for that chain, like different payments integrations as well, like Solana Pay, or like different gas relayers or whatnot. A set of validators that already maintain the chain for you, right? You can obviously run your own full node as well. And so like, I just, two of the things that I think make much more sense to live in a unified L1 are just DeFi, so finance, and payments. Like those two things make much more sense to me that they're on a shared environment, unified or universal environment, rather than kind of these different islands connected through, you know, cryptography eventually, but currently they'd require quite a bit of trust. So I think that, you know, I'm not sure if they did this on purpose. Like I doubt that Stripe was like very into these discussions. Probably what happened there is Solana, Avalanche, et cetera, Polygon have very solid business development support, right? They have very competent people in those roles that can handhold you, that can give you resources, that can hook you up, help with marketing, all sorts of things. So, you know, I think like suggesting something like, why didn't they just do an app chain and then use Celestia as DA? And then like, that's just so complex. Like nobody cares about this. Okay. And I don't understand how that would be the best solution. Like a transaction on Solana is still usually cheaper than that. And by the way, with local free markets, which are admittedly buggy in implementation, but that's an implementation bug, which is being fixed. Once that happens, payments are super easy to or trivial to parallelize, right? Like if I send you a payment and then, you know, my dad sends my grandpa a payment, those are parallelized. They pay different fees or they pay the same low fees that aren't affected by some other hotspot. I'm super, and maybe like I did work on digital payments at Canadian banks and fintechs. So like I do have PTSD from doing that potentially, but I just think a global infrastructure that you can plug into without worrying about all these weird fractal situations is just much more comfortable for me.
All right, let's take a quick break to talk about Helium Mobile. Every month, I'm reminded of the pain of a phone bill for someone who is terminally online. Those data charges are no joke. Well, Helium Mobile is bringing a crypto-native solution to this. It's powered by a combination of a decentralized wireless network and the nation's largest 5G network to bring reliable coverage to its users. The coolest part for me are definitely the mobile token rewards. They're earned by sharing a location, which allows more people to build coverage where it's needed most. So effectively, the token rewards end up bringing a better product to the customer. But even cooler, you can take these rewards and pay for your phone bill directly within the app. This is a beautiful showcase of arguably crypto's two strongest use cases, incentivized user action and crypto payment rails. The phone plan is unlimited talk, text, and data, plus it's affordable at just $20 a month. If this sounds interesting to you, go to hellohelium.com to get 3 free months of service with the code LightSpeedMobile. Again, that's LightSpeedMobile, all caps, no spaces. Be sure to check out the link in the show notes for easy access. All right, guys, let's get back to the show.
Yeah, and that makes sense. I mean, I definitely agree with the sentiment there. I'm trying to play devil's advocate here, though, just for the sake of the argument. And like, all right, what are the advantages? I guess one advantage would be Solana sucked really, really bad for about a 3 to 4 week span there. And if you, I'm a payments processor, I do not want that experience for my user. They did integrate a handful of chains where if like Solana was broken, that doesn't mean crypto payments are broken. You have other options. But I guess like one benefit would be you have your own, no, like the only thing happening would be your transactions. But I like to your point about fee markets, like I agree. Transfers are going to be low CU requirement transactions that shouldn't be intensive by any capacity and should be paralyzable. What's also cool here is like I'm 100% going to build a dashboard that tracks all of Stripe's payments across all these different chains. Like, how cool is that? We see the real time like economic activity happening in the physical world by through the proxy of a blockchain. And like that shit is so cool to me. Which you could theoretically do on your own app chain, but I don't think we've seen any good data dissemination of any of these newer app chains that are being launched by any of these RAS providers. It's hard to get your data indexed because there is a manual process and indexing is not easy. I definitely agree.
To your point about potentially the, like if there's a problem on the chain, like what happens, like for example, use the past three, or maybe like 2 weeks ago as an example. Well, one, no blockchain is safe from implementation bugs, right? One of these RAS services potentially might have a bug in it, probably much more likely than Solana actually, since Solana has been around for much longer and has a lot of engineers working on it now with multiple clients in the works. So that is going to be a problem regardless. Now, yeah, it did happen on Solana due to insane activity. That's fair. There's actually a team called Code who's been on the show twice now. They actually noticed this in like 2021. They were one of the first teams to migrate. And they actually built the soft sequencer on their end such that if there's a problem on Solana, the payments still happen through their channels, but then it sells on Solana afterwards, kind of like a quasi L2. I think it's a fair concern, but I don't think it's unique to Solana.
Agreed, for sure. Agreed there. Maybe that's a good ending point for the Stripe discussion. Overall, I think it's huge. And I think my biggest takeaway of the whole thing is Web2 is excited to do the rebranding for us. I'll put the link in the show notes. I encourage everyone to go listen to the 2 minute piece. The 40 minute thing is super cool, but the 2 minute piece exclusively is like a bit of an oh shit moment. Next segment, let's bring out the knives a little bit. Let's get people fired up. So I've been tracking MEV capture on the L1s I've been paying attention to this for quite some time. And more recently, I think this came back up because Jito has been crushing it and there's no way around it. So Jason Yanowitz, founder of Blockworks, had a podcast with Santiago and Kyle Samani, the Multicoin. I think he manages the Liquid book there. I'm not entirely sure if it's the Liquid or the Venture side, but nonetheless, Kyle and all of Multicoin, I think, have this view that the only valuable piece of a blockchain is MEV, right? That is what you're valuing. They think transaction fees will trend to zero over time as resources get more efficiently priced and machines get better. And because of that, I was like, I haven't plotted the MEV capture on Solana, which because of Jito has grown exponentially against that of Ethereum, which is sort of the MEV capture giant with Flashbots building MEV Boost roughly 2 years ago now. And so I plotted this out on a chart and I don't have a huge opinion on whether or not Kyle and Multicoin's framework on like MEV being the only valuable part of a blockchain being true or false. But nonetheless, it is pretty interesting to see the comparison here. So Solana of the last 2 weeks has actually flipped Ethereum in MEV specifically that is being returned to validators. And so for the more technical folk in the audience, we're using the baseline MEV calculation pioneered by rated network for Ethereum. And then we're just counting all tips less the 5% Jito Labs fee that are being processed by the Jito block engine. So that is the comparison here. It is effectively the amount of MEV being returned to validators. And personally think it's a good comp, but would be curious to debate it if anyone felt passionately about that not being the case. But nonetheless, what I think this does signal is, sort of what we've all known and just actively discussed over the last few months is economic activity is flourishing on chain on Solana. But I'm curious if you have any thoughts around the idea of MEV capture, the merits of it. Is it good? Is it bad? Is it evil? Is it sinister? And kind of like where it goes in the future.
Sure. Yeah. I actually wasn't aware of this. So that's interesting. I wasn't expecting that.
Shout out to those guys over at Blockworks Research, man. They're killing it.
Agreed. So like, you know, MAV has, it feels like one of those bell curve meme topics where like some people just are like, oh, MAV is evil. He's just robbing retail or something. And it's like, okay, that's like one way you can think about it. But like really MEV is just a thing that exists that you can't really avoid in block building. In like people will say some stupid shit like, oh, just randomize the transactions or something. It's like, that's not going to work. What are you talking about? Like you seriously think we did not try that or like thought about that in the past 8 years? So like, it's just a thing that's going to exist. I think, I asked Lucas this question, actually, the CEO of Jito on this podcast with Tolly, and I think his answer was like he sees the end state as being super transparent, accessible, and democratized, like something along those lines. Like I think what sucks or what potentially could suck is like MEV is being done by like this one evil entity that's just like robbing everybody all the time and nobody's even aware of it, for example, like just shady stuff. But like if people have access, like fair auctions that they can like tip validators such that both they benefit and the validator benefits, and then everybody's aware and then everybody has access, then you've kind of minimized the externalities of it. And I don't know, like I think it's just, you know, maybe it's like a weird example, like of like UV rays from like the sun or something. It's like, that's going to just be there. You can be prepared for it and like take steps to like benefit from it, maybe even tan a little bit. But like, you can't just say the sun is evil or right. Like, I just kind of made that up.
No, I kind of like it.
And then, you know, about multi-coin framework specifically, I do agree that there's a lot of probably a tremendous amount of, the thesis of like an asset's value probably relies on MEV. And which is actually why, like, I think probably Multicoin isn't too bullish on L2s, because like the second you start doing that, like, where's MEV going, right? Like, are the sequencers capturing it? I think like didn't somebody launch like a bootleg like base sequencer or something that was capturing some MEV that Jesse wasn't aware of for like a few days or something? Like, people do some crazy shit for MEV. Actually, I should bring this up as well. People already started spinning up private mempools on Solana that are sandwiching users, by the way. I just kind of remember this. But remember, we chatted about how like the argument was like, okay, well, now that Jito has stopped, others will just come in and spin this up. But then the argument was like, well, it's very difficult on Solana, and then like it'll be hard for people to get like half the stake to adopt it. Turns out, people are actually, they already have figured it out, and there's already MEV happening in the form of sandwich attacks, which is relatively recent. And so like what I'm trying to portray with that, and we can talk about that, by the way, is that MEV is this thing that's just going to be around. And I think the approach that Jito has, which is trying to make it transparent and accessible, is going to be in the best interest of everybody. Right. So that's what I think about it.
Yeah. No, you bring up great points there. There's definitely like good and evil MEV, if you will. I think the multi-coin framework is actually pretty good in calling it benign and malicious. Maybe I forgot the other word, but nonetheless, there's definitely benign MEV, right? Like this could be like Oracle updates or liquidations or cross-dex arbitrage, things that like generally benefit users and are good for the system, versus, you know, seeing a transaction in a mempool and sandwiching it, giving the user a worse trade and you profiting. Like, that is extractive. It's definitely a challenge, like separating how do you promote and capture and return the benign MEV to the correct user. And I'm being vague here because you could say you could burn it and give it back to all of Sol holders, or you could give it to the leader who is distributing that to their stakers. And maybe that's the you know, relevant party here. So there's room for discussion there as well. But you mentioned one other thing there, which was base. And they, yeah, so what happened there was they actually left an endpoint to their sequencer public, so people could see basically the sequencer's mempool. Definitely an oopsie, but I think they've since fixed that issue. And then the third piece there was, okay, I didn't know. I've heard chatter of these new mempools cropping up, but I don't know anything about them. Like, do we know what the names of these businesses are? Because I want to go track this and like figure out how much stake they have in this, but I haven't had the time to dig in. So I'm curious, like, do you know any about like the frequency of which these validators are kind of opting in? Because you're right, there's a massive monetary incentive to participate in sandwiching users if like that's what you're okay with doing. Like the money is there and the money brings in people. There's no doubt about it. Like it does inspire people to do crazy shit. And that is not, you know, unique to blockchains. That is a global real world phenomenon. So I'm curious, do you know how much stake these guys have?
I think I don't know the percent of stake they have. I do know that there is Cybels within a delegation program that need to be kind of squashed out that are doing this. I believe it's like two or three providers even that are doing it, based on what I read on Twitter and some chats. But I don't know anything beyond that. It is pretty difficult to, you can detect it on chain. Like you can kind of see it. Like there's a guy named Shane, who posts about it, where you can see like just users getting wrecked. And then Jupiter actually added, kind of an MEV protected, way of swapping on Jupiter. I don't know if you caught that, in the past week. So like, I mean, most trades happen there through anyway, so that should help users. But yeah, I would say details are a bit sparse on this because it's pretty evolving. And it does take advantage of like some things that are kind of broken on Solana, that are being fixed. And so it's just like a very moving target.
Yeah, yeah. I remember we did a pod right after Jito shut off the mempool. And I think my like, you know, knee-jerk reaction was this is probably not a good move because it's going to, you know, the incentive is so large. I think, you know, fast forwarding, I definitely see the team's perspective and it probably was the right move to turn it off. But I think they need to be cognizant of like, if these things do, if these all, you know, alt mempools, if you will, start like do getting a meaningful portion of stake. I mean, it's almost like this necessary evil that like the Jito guys are actually trying to solve for MEV on Solana. There is no doubt in my mind about that. They want all of the good things for the base layer. There's even a SIMD 0109 that I think it was Buffalo posted to the Solana Foundation GitHub. And it's basically to add a tipping mechanism to send SOL directly to the leader. So like they're trying to make this as accessible as possible. And it's like, yeah, I kind of disagreed with the decision at first, but I definitely learned my lesson to not fade these guys. Like they're actually trying to make this a better place, specifically Solana and as it pertains to MEV. And so I don't know, man, it's a tough problem, but I guess this kind of parlays into FireDancer. We ended the Anatoly and Lucas chat on like, what does FireDancer mean for the chain? Helios, just put out a nice post on the explanation of FireDancer titled What is FireDancer? And it's a deep dive. So I will link that in the show notes as well. But how does FireDancer tie into the MEV side of this? Actually, Mike Ippolito and the other co-founder of Blockworks, him and I were chatting earlier today and he brought it up. It was just like, okay, so, you know, a team from Jump is building FireDancer. Jump is also has a HFT trading firm. And does it give this HFT arm like a competitive advantage when it comes to MEV? Because they, like, that code base is extremely complicated. And yes, it's open source, but it's going to take time for other people to get up to speed with exactly how this code base works. And this was, you know, right before I hopped on the pod, so I don't have a good take on this yet, but I'm curious, like, does FireDancer being built by the Jump team, like, give those minds any edge over maybe other people competing in this landscape of MEV?
Well, the way it works currently is that they do chat with like Anza and Jito quite frequently, I believe. I mean, especially Anza. And so like people are aware of what's being worked on and how it works continuously, especially within Solana Core. And so I think in that sense, like Anza obviously has somewhat of a incentive to detect if something like that were to happen. Same with Jito, obviously. And so it based on how nobody has detected that, I do know a good amount of the people working on it, and I know that they're like half of them weren't even at Jump before this project. Like Richard wasn't at Jump, Liam wasn't at Jump, and they kind of just joined for this project, I believe. I mean, I don't know their incentive, but like they're not like, so I don't, some professor from Columbia actually commented on my post too about like, hey, like, isn't it kind of weird that Jump is doing this? And like, you know, Jump is a colossal entity, and this is one small, tiny technical team. They are getting a grant for it, so they already have an incentive from that. And it is open source, most importantly, and they do share all updates, so anybody can take a look. And judging by how people have already brought back mempools, like they're for sure looking at least some set of people are looking at the code here, right? And so, and you know, by the way, it's going to be in like testnet for a while. It's still like a while out. Like people always ask like when, and it's probably like end of this year to beginning of next year at the very best, assuming nothing goes wrong. But you know, it is an interesting consideration, but I think it's like super overblown. Like it's just code. Like you can just see it. Well, like anybody who knows C, for example, will have an advantage, let's say, okay, because it's in C. Maybe they'll understand it better. But then again, that's just like, that's not like a, I feel like crypto has this thing of like just framing everything as malicious and non-malicious or something, which is probably a good thing to have in such an environment where a lot of things often are. But like in this case, you know, maybe it's reading a bit much into it in my view.
Yeah, that's a fair point. And to be extremely clear, I'm like not implying any insidious behavior or anything. It was just like a, you know, like does the builder of the, or the creator, I should say, of the client, like have any edge? And I don't really have a good answer to that, but.
I mean, they definitely have an edge. But like the edge is kind of, like, I don't know. Like, I know for a fact that Jump has extremely strict legal and regulatory compliance. Like they can't even really tweet things. So like if they were doing MEV, right, that would be like, I just don't think they would take that risk. Like I just highly doubt it. That's kind of my, which actually now that I think about it, I think that's a pretty fair point, because like if they're too scared to even tweet, they are not going to be doing malicious MEV on the chain. Like they will absolutely not take that risk.
Okay. That's probably a good point. You also brought up the Anza client there. And what is the end state for the Anza client, considering FireDancer will be significantly more performant right out of the gate? Like, are they trying to be... Yeah, I guess let's leave it there. Like, what is the end state of the Anza client?
Yeah, I mean, one, I'm not sure if the FireDancer client will be much more performant out of the gate. I believe there will probably be some hiccups and iterations that still need to be made after that. I haven't seen many engineering releases go flawlessly in my life, if ever. So that'll probably be an issue. And I think what will happen is Anza will learn from FireDancer and take the best parts of their stack and try to improve their stack as much. And then maybe you kind of start having like kind of a competition, I would say, maybe that, because like Solana doesn't believe in like the, or at least from what I've seen, it doesn't seem like this community believes in kind of the DEI approach of client diversity of like everybody must get their fair share. I think it should be, personally speaking, I think it should be just the best solution is the best client that people run. And then if you're concerned about liveness failures, we add some fallback mechanism. Right. And the top two you know, 33% of validators, most likely if there's sufficient activity on the chain, are in a financial position to be able to do that to begin with. Right. That's my take on it. Obviously, Anza is a company. they have their own incentives and goals that might change that I'm just not familiar with, that Trent will smack me in the face with if I get wrong. But I, like, if I were them, I would probably just try to take what's best from Fire Dancer and then kind of do this kind of friendly competition between the clients, such that the performance is always kind of at the bleeding edge and people are just pushing themselves to make this the best kind of global state machine there is.
My friends, big, big news. Blockworks is hosting Permissionless 3 in Salt Lake City this year. So we're heading west for 3 days starting October 9th. Permissionless is our industry's premier DeFi event that brings together crypto natives from all over the globe. I've personally been the last 2 years and can honestly say that the attendees are incredible. It's people who actually care about crypto. We'll also have more than 200 industry titans speaking at the event. And this includes builders like Lucas Bruder from Jito Labs and Brian Pellegrino from Layer Zero, or investors like Kyle Samani and Joe McCann, and even elected officials like Representative Tom Emmer, who's fighting the good fight in Washington. And it's narrative season, so we're going to be covering the 7 hottest themes in crypto. This includes things like modularity and restaking, or Bitcoin and L2s, and even AI and crypto. The goal is to keep you up to speed on major developments in the industry. Ticket prices will be structurally increasing over time, so get your ticket today. For my Lightspeed family, I got you. We're going to use code LIGHTSPEED10 in all caps, no space, for 10% off your ticket. All right, everyone. I look forward to seeing you at Permissionless 3, and let's get back to the show. Competition indeed breeds excellence. So I do enjoy that that approach there. Yeah, I know it'll be interesting. And I kind of agree, like, the Ethereum's approach, I guess, makes sense given its, you know, it, there's two different views, right? Like, Solana is definitely a go fast and break things chain. It goes down. The price, the last outage you had, token price barely budged. Like, nobody cares because, like, that's kind of a precedent of, like, hey, we're trying to build this thing as fast as it physically possibly can be. And it's going to go down sometimes. That's kind of like the general overview of how maybe the average market participant would view it. Whereas Ethereum going down would be like catastrophic. Minds would break, basically. And so I kind of like your approach of maybe we just try to max out one of these things and then have a fallback option for something that's like reliable. Seems to be a logical second way to approach the concept of a blockchain client. And even Paradigm is building Wrath, or they're rebuilding the Go Ethereum client in Rust. And it is, by all intents and purposes, seems to be a significant performance boost over the existing clients, plural. And I think that's really going to empower L2s more than anything else, because my very novice understanding of Wrath is that there will be an increased hardware requirements to run it. And thus it's like better suited for L2s probably than the base layer. So it'd be super interesting to kind of see how this pans out. I don't know if you have any thoughts or have looked into that at all.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be interested to see what happens if Paradigm releases a client that's like X amount more performant than the existing client, especially like random shit like enterprise Java clients, which I don't like. Why is that there? Like, once that's there, I would be very interested to see what happens to the social layer of the chain and this approach to client diversity. Maybe you can kind of do a thought experiment. Like, assume that it'll have the same hardware requirements, okay? But assume that it increases performance 2x. Okay. So, meaning you can get the same amount of people, nodes on the network, but you just get better performance. Now, do you still force them to arbitrarily do client diversity? Okay. That's an interesting thought experiment. Ethereum kind of has the inactivity leak stuff, right? Which is kind of different than Solana. So there's like some difference that, like, it's not skeuomorphic to compare these things one-to-one. I'd be interested to see that. I do agree that it seems like it'd be more useful for L2s. And by the way, I think L2s like should be like, just personally speaking, just beefed up to the max. Just jack the shit out of those sequencers and do as much performance as you can, so we can actually give developers like a useful sandbox that they can build applications in. And then you can Azure Validity Proof on top of that. Okay. It's already relatively central, or, you know, you're already making quite a bit of assumptions with the security councils and the proofs not working properly, or just not there in the first place. So, like, why not just, you know, I just don't like this mediocritan approach of like, oh, we're kind of decentralized. We're not really decentralized. We're kind of performant, not really performant. It's like, just do the thing, right? And that's why I like Solana. Although to be honest, I think Solana is now probably shifting a bit more conservative, right? Like
right.
The upgrades seem to be coming at a much slower pace with much more paranoia around it, as opposed to just ship the thing, right? Which, you know, probably, I mean, that's just a business decision by Anza for what they think is correct. But I like playing around and just, I think we're just so like, if your time horizon of crypto is like, oh, this is going to be around for hundreds of years or whatever, thousands of years. Okay, this is like not even the first second then in that time frame. And so why not push it as much as you can? But I don't think everybody is as insane as me.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely get your viewpoint, but then it's like, you know, if you even just rewind, let's say 18 months ago, you could very much do that. Like, yes, there's absolutely people building on chain 18 months ago, but you know, you're very much in the chewing glass phase. Whereas now it's like, all right, there's a lot of real applications that people are interacting with and end users on chain. And breaking now hurts a little bit more than breaking 18 months ago, I think. So I do get it. But to your point, like, there's two ends of the spectrum. There's like maximizing for decentralization and maximizing for performance. And like, maybe you know, Ethereum is very much maximized for decentralization. And that's a design decision trade-off. That is very much so a trade-off. And there's pros and cons to that. And then Solana, Aptos, Sui are probably further out on the other opposite end of this spectrum, where you kind of want to like get decentralization over time. But for now, it's like, let's max this puppy out. Totally agree with you on the L2s. And I always have like wondered why this is, but I think it's really a product of the EVM, right? Because even if you just like juice the gas limit on each block in an L2, and like you still have the problem of state growth and state management, which isn't really solved for the EVM, which I think like Wrath takes a good stab at doing. And then Monad is building out a whole custom stack to optimize this piece of the EVM as well. And so it's like, you can't really maximize them today. I think Wrath really is the answer. And then you're also seeing SVM L2s come online. And that's where it's going to get super interesting. Like, you know, Eclipse is one that comes to mind. Like disclosure here, like I did take part in an early round in Eclipse, but they're, I called them the Megatron of blockchains, right? Like they're using the latest and greatest for DA, the latest and greatest for execution environment, and they're also like pulling from Ethereum liquidity. So like it's gonna be really, really interesting to see what that thing can do. Or some of these, like, even like these Move rollups. We just had Rushi on the pod from Movement Labs, and they're like bringing Move rollups to Ethereum, which would be cool too, because I think that's where you're gonna get that next wave of performance when it comes to L2s. I don't really know the timeline on Wrath. I'd love to chat with somebody from Paradigm about that and like when that'll be ready for like L2 mainnets.
Yeah, I think that makes sense. I mean, AltVM certainly, like SVM rollups make a lot of sense. MoveVMs, I guess I need to get more familiar with it, but that makes sense high level. I think like there's a team called, a team I invested in called MegaETH that is really about kind of beefing up the hardware and just making the trade-offs very clear. And it's like, this is what we're going to do. So I like that approach a lot.
Dumb name though. MegaETH, come on.
Yeah, I think it's they had hats that were like in the style of Megadeth, like the metal band. Yeah, there's a story behind that name, but we can have them on the show at some point to talk about it.
Yeah, for sure. And going back to that earlier point of people building on Solana, and like, you know, you kind of got to be cognizant of the ship increasing and having to steer this thing through the open ocean. Kamino and Drift have recently launched their airdrops and the announcement of their token. So we're finally starting to see some of these blue chip Solana projects become liquid, which kind of begs the question is like, you know, what's going to happen with a bit of a wealth effect taking place in the Solana ecosystem? Jito really kicked this off, dropped everybody a new Toyota Corolla or nicer. and Kamino and Drift have again recently joined the crew there. You've been very loud about wanting people to drop their tokens. So I'm curious if you're excited to finally see some of these, you know, top end projects really get there. Drift is the go-to perp dex on Solana. And honestly, I think Kamino is the largest non-LST provider by TVL these days.
Yeah, I mean, I tweeted about kind of the team slosh tokens a few months ago, just trying to maybe get some steam off Jito's momentum. It probably, you know, it's hard to say this is a good time, bad time, whatever, because if your time horizon is, you know, vast enough, it shouldn't really matter. But yeah, I'm pretty excited about teams releasing their tokens. Camino and Drift are both great teams. And there'll be more, like Zeta also announced a while back as well. And then there's also a lot of LSTs being launched on Solana now as well. So there's a lot of, I really like it because you're giving, in the case of Camino and Drift, those are like protocols that people use. So they have like good user bases. I use Drift quite a bit, or I used to before I lost all my money. It's really good to see. Now, of course, the market kind of tanked yesterday. This is May 1st. And so I feel for the community team there. But like, I think they've been around since the bottom of Solana. So this will kind of just be like a little paper cut for them. They'll just come back. I would like to see people in the future probably stay away from this meta of points and, incentivizing usage, but then like not really making anything clear in terms of criteria. Like, actually, maybe a good point here is the Eigenlayer drop that happened this week. Yep. I thought that was, you know, people seem to have very strong opinions about it. Like, for example, specifically the case where people from every geo were able to participate and farm and whatnot and help the protocol, but then those people from those same regions aren't actually able to claim the drops. So yeah, people get very spicy once there's like free tokens and whatnot involved. My biggest problem with it was that it was just super fucking complicated. Like, I just, you do not need that many words to describe what you're doing. Like, one of the things I really am passionate about, let's say, is founders of the projects doing direct, simple communication with their audiences, saying like, hey, this is the token. This is what it does. Here you go. That's it. Like, a 44-page paper, fine, great. But like, pre-coordinating with your investors, which obviously they did, from the amount of threads that I saw, which were very well thought out. Plus, like, these media appearances and well, that's all fine and good. But like, I still don't quite understand what the token does, right? Like, kind of do. But like, I don't know. There's just a lot of things that we need to rethink about the meta of like announce airdrop or points program, farm users and users farm you. It's just like everybody's farming each other. Use some of that to raise, do a raise, set weird conditions. Not everybody can claim, everybody's angry. It just doesn't seem very, it's only worked in certain cases. It seems like it's not like a recipe for success. So I'm not sure why people follow it as a recipe.
100% true. The inner subjective work token of Eigen,
universal.
Exactly. I agree with your high level thoughts there. I think it comes into like a lack of communication, which we see pretty consistently in this industry, unfortunately. You should have told, you know, regions that aren't going to be eligible up front. They may or may not have known that, to be honest, but like, then there's probably some like weird legal aspect where maybe the labs entity is running the front end and the foundation is responsible for the token drop. And, you know, that could cause some issues there. I don't know. I definitely, again, I sympathize for anybody in the US trying to launch a token. It is not easy to do. But like, I know there's also like rumors. Again, these are rumors. I have no idea if these are true, that like the token vesting kind of got backdated and then tokens have already been vesting. I want to caveat that with, I have no idea if that's true. But so like that rumor was really circulating hard when this whole news came out. And then,
isn't the vesting period also unknown or something? Like,
no, but it's 1-year cliff, 2-year lock. So that's worse than industry standards. So like, there's, it's like, it's, to me, it's one of those situations where there's like three or four red flags. And if you had one of those, like, okay, fine. And everybody has a red flag. All right. But you have three or four. So like there needs to be like a deeper level of analysis here. And because like, to me, they tried to do something kind of interesting with the token launch. So low float, high FDV tokens are a serious problem. You basically get an FDV that you can never live up to. And when, you know, there's unlocks that happen or whether it's programmatic issuance, your token has to go down because it can never be this like perceived value of the FDV, and people who buy at the top get wrecked and will never recover. You can look at like a lot of token charts and see the evidence of this. And so I think they actually took a pretty interesting approach at attempting to solve that. And they basically said, all right, we're going to do a 5% of the airdrop up front, and that's going to be locked. So it's basically like a vested airdrop. And then my presumption, I don't know how accurate this is, but my presumption is they'll basically do like three seasons where you get 5%, 5%, 5%. And on the third season, all of the airdrop will unlock. So that way you get this like extended rewards program. You're not just like shooting your shot all at once with a full 15% airdrop. This is better for the protocol. By kind of extending this rewards program out. And then there, you also don't get like the, you know, if I can launch today and the token was liquid, it'd be 5% circulating. Like that is bound to be a classic high FDV token with a low float that can never live up to this FDV, and users will get screwed. So I think they took a candid approach of trying to fix this, assuming that was the plan, right? Like if they were actually going to do 5-5-5, get the 15%, unlock these tokens. Now, when you pair that system with a team and investor schedule that's shortened at a 2-year vest, 1-year cliff, and it's like, is that really what you're trying to do? Like, you're kind of, again, pairing up these red flags together. And then, like, the lack of communication on who's eligible is another, like, it spiraled out of control really quickly, to be honest. And I think it's really easy to point the gun at somebody launching a token. And then this is the last piece here, I think, is like, you're making a trade when you're farming. And I don't think that gets fully understood, right? Like if I'm depositing into EigenLayer, I am making a trade that they are going to reward me, and they might not. And I can be upset about that, but it's not like criminal. It's definitely morally corrupt. I think if you just like ran a points program and then didn't reward users, yeah, like you're literally, now you're returning the farming. But the reality is, the users are farming the protocol. They're going to take this free money and sell it and profit, right? Like that's what's happening. It is very much a trade. And like people will say, oh yeah, but the cost of capital, blah, blah, blah. Like it's not free. I'm putting my money in there. Yes, you absolutely are. But you're not thinking about the fact that your cost of capital includes doing the exact same thing in another smart contract that has probably got worse audits than what EigenLayer got. So I don't know. Like I really struggle to sympathize with farmers on this, and I'm sure I'll get clipped and dunked on for that. But I tend to want to take the side of the protocol, because just put yourself in the shoes of being a US resident and launching a token. Like it's a fucking shit show. It is not easy to do. But again, like I just want to exclamate, like put a point on, there's a lot of red flags here and a lot of questions that are unanswered.
Yeah. I think, I don't think there's like probably any single person to blame for any of this. It's probably just like a momentum and inertia thing. I don't think users are in the wrong. I personally think protocols are generally more in the wrong because very simply, they kind of just fail to build something people want. That's kind of, I just super simple minded there, like left curve. Probably could blame the VCs to some extent as well, or really just a regulatory environment is another problem. But like, and I've used this a few times now, but like this meta of, paying people or promising to pay people so that they pretend to use your shit, so that you then grow, inflated metrics, which you then raise off of, is just like kind of this weird version of leverage that mixes like capital, financial capital and social capital. And like, it's just so bizarre, and all of it would go away if actually the thing that you were building was solving a problem that actually benefited somebody, such that they were just using the thing, right? That's kind of the point. I say this example a few times, but like I was using Jito's protocol to earn MEV revenue because I wanted to do that. I did not know there was going to be an airdrop. And then I was like, oh shit, they gave me money for this. And I still use it. Okay. And I'm now interested in the governance proposals, for example. Like that feels like a well fleshed out one. Anyway, that actually reminds me of another thing that I saw today. I saw an article by CoinDesk of potentially like multiple teams doing restaking on Solana. I think he said something like half a dozen, so like six teams doing it, including Jito. And that prompted my tweet today, which was something like, there's this bizarre loop where like something gets buzz on one chain and then a set of teams take it and they're like, okay, this, but on this chain. And then they raise it at crazy valuations because the VCs just pattern match without actually thinking for some reason. And they're not familiar with the intricate details and the differences between the different chains that make these comparisons basically infeasible. Like restaking on Solana is not restaking on Ethereum, okay? It's not. And for a team that does not work on Solana, has not worked on Solana, or has a surface level understanding, to come and do this on Solana is going to be just about impossible. I mean, it's super difficult because you don't understand the problems. You don't understand the fine details that you really can't understand unless you've worked on the core protocol yourself. And like, what problem are you solving, right? Like, are you solving for the problem of raising money from VCs? Because there's nobody, like, what's the problem solving? And then the elephant in the room then is you're competing against Jito, who actually is trying to solve problems, who has been here and understands it better than you. So this skeuomorphic copy, this product on this chain is something that's annoyed me for a long time, which is why I just came up with only possible on Solana to encourage people. Okay, just build shit that's only possible on Solana. You have like an inherent moat by the platform that you're building on, right? Like if you're building on AWS, you don't have a moat against Google Cloud. Your company does not. But in terms of blockchains, that's actually not the case. The platform you build on can literally give your business a moat over other chains sometimes. And there's a finite amount of time you have to take advantage of that. So anyway, rant over.
No, that's a proper rant. And honestly, like my issue with the restaking stuff in general is like, what is this enabling? Like, what are we building that we couldn't build before? Let's look at the, I think it's like the first six or seven, AVSs that have been approved to launch on Eigenlayer. So we have data availability, Oracle service, consensus layer for deepens, ZK co-processor, ZK co-processor again, a roll-up solution, interoperability for roll-ups, Web3 gaming, okay, that's interesting, multi-prover, and omni-chain L3 for trading. Like, what the fuck have we accomplished there? you can do all of that already. Like, we already have a DA layers left and right. And I don't know. Like, that's really what my issue with this is. And there's like two pieces to restaking. There is the native restaked asset. So in the case of Eigenlayer, that is a like solo node operator actually restaking the ETH that it controls itself. And then there's the idea of like restaked LSTs, which is literally just taking any unit of value and allocating it to provide some service, right? Like USDC would function the exact same as Lido staked ETH. So there's like two buckets there. The native restaked asset stuff is way more interesting and actually could probably add some benefit to the Ethereum base layer. For example, we mentioned base rollups earlier. That is when you use the L1 as a sequencer. A huge problem with that is you cannot give pre-confirmations. So users on the L2, that is a base sequencer, are subject to the block times of the L1, which for the case of Ethereum is 12 seconds. And that's kind of a no-fly zone at this point. Too many chains that offer too fast of confirmation times. A restake solution is a potential option to solving that problem. Very cool. Now we're actually like bettering something. But again, like I think you could argue that should just be a native offering of the L1 and doesn't need restake solution. That I think, so there's some like native Solana restaking stuff that could be pretty interesting, but again, like that's a whole new problem set. And I think like building that on Solana would be incredibly complex. I'd love to have Lucas on the pod or whoever's leading the restaking charge for Jito, just to dive into that specific side, because there is probably something there, but the whole like idea of I'm restaking LSTs, like that is really stupid in my mind. And like, I mean that in the nicest way possible. It just does not seem to be productive. And that seems to be like really pushing forward the infrastructure circle jerk of all the shit we're building. And you rant about this all the time. Like, we need apps, man. We need apps. Give me something people can use. And I just don't see restaking as being that thing that's going to like enable new apps in my mind.
Yeah, I don't think it certainly won't enable. I mean, I don't want to say certainly. It doesn't seem like it would enable new apps, especially not ones that, I mean, because like, I don't know. I feel like people just, this decentralization thing always gets misdefined and like politicized and stuff. But it's like decentralization is good, but decentralization for its own sake, which generally seems to be what's happening here, is useless, because what are you decentralizing, right? You need to first have something worth decentralizing, right? Otherwise, like, what? Why are you making something that's already not working even less workable? On Solana, it's a bit different because you can actually use the stuff on Solana itself, whereas on Ethereum, they're kind of just offloading this to other things that kind of connect to Ethereum. But on Solana, it's just all doable on the L1, and so you can maybe get like a weird effect. And I think Jito has StakeNet, which one of the things it enables is this. That could be interesting. But again, I just, I actually really preferred and this is, I think, where the next wave will come from, the SocialFi side of crypto. Like, people talk shit about Frentech quite a bit when it came out, but like, look, man, it's fun. It's interesting. People want to use it. Okay. You can probably leverage that in some less different bonding curves, let's say, but like it has users. Okay. Farcaster has users. Like, I think social apps personally are going to be what's more important going forward. And like, Farcaster doesn't even really need to use a blockchain, right? Like, they kind of just use like Optimism, I think, for like a registry of like identities and stuff, it seems, and not too much else. And so, I don't know. I would just, if there's anything to take away from my rant, I would say to anybody who's ever interested in building anything, please just look at an ecosystem, identify the gaps, be curious about them, and then build something to solve those problems. But just try to stay away from following a trend and then launching another chain just to benefit from the trend and raise a few bucks, because like, it's going to come down at some point unless you solve a problem.
As a bag holder of your friend tech keys, man, get it together. We need you posting, dude. Smart. It's been a pleasure ranting with you today, my man. I appreciate it as always. And we will be back next week with another roundup. Cheers, yes, everyone. Sure.